Section 2. The Rip Van Winkle State. As you read, look for how Rip Van Winkle came to represent the poor conditions in North Carolina after the War of 1812. Archibald Murphy's proposals for improving transportation and education. Why water transportation was unsuccessful in North Carolina. Obstacles that delayed the accomplishment of Murphy's proposals. And the following terms: Rip Van Winkle State, subsistence farming, clubbing, recession, internal improvements, canal, common school, and literary fund. One of the most popular stories told in the early years of the 1800s concerned Rip Van Winkle, a fictional character in a village along the Hudson River in New York. He was said to have gone hunting, fallen asleep for 20 years, and, when he awoke, been amazed at the changes that had occurred all around him. In the 20 years after the War of 1812, many Americans thought North Carolinians resembled old Rip. At a time when the nation was growing and changing, the leaders of our state seemed to be asleep to improving conditions. We were being called a Rip Van Winkle state. By that time, for example, three generations of farmers had plowed the best land over and over. Because little was done to preserve the land, the topsoil eroded away in heavy rains. Over time, the size of harvests went down. Soil washed away into nearby streams, clogging them and increasing the chance of flooding. There was a major flood in the western part of the state in 1816. Down east, the sediment carried by the Roanoke, Tar, and Neuse rivers gradually flowed into sounds, making them even shallower and harder to navigate. Over time, it became more difficult to make a living in many parts of the state. Subsistence farming. Most families, therefore, had to practice subsistence farming, where they grew first what they needed to feed themselves and their livestock. Only then could they sell their surplus, often to their neighbors. A farmer might pay for the repair of his wagon by helping the wagon maker harvest his corn. A farm wife might pay for a barrel of molasses by sending a son to chop firewood for a period of time. Such bartering, trading one item for another, was very important because most North Carolinians lacked a lot of cash. As a Beaver Dam resident recalled, with such a system, the people were not rich, but they were independent of want or care. Neighbors also cooperated in long-distance marketing. Most farmers did not grow enough to go to Charleston or Wilmington by themselves. The horses would eat up all the profits if the wagon was half full. So neighborhoods practiced clubbing, where they combined their surplus crops into one large load and trusted their friends and neighbors to go to market for them. One of the best returns on farming was the sale of livestock. They were cheap to raise because the animals had the run of the woods to look for food. The state struggles. The state did little to help. Most of the legislators were followers of Nathaniel Macon, who continued to argue that most problems could be solved without government direction. North Carolinians elected representatives who would not raise the already low tax rate. Most years, the state barely had enough money to pay the salaries of state officials. Sometimes sheriffs did not even bother to send tax collections to Raleigh. Many of the academies founded in the state closed when students could not keep up payments. In 1826, a governor observed that it had been easier to be educated in North Carolina before the Revolution than it was after 1815. There were only a few hopeful developments. The state continued to hold stock in banks it had chartered in Wilmington and New Bern before the War of 1812. Several partners started a cotton mill at Lincolnton to make yarn. Otway Burns used some of his wartime profits to run a steamboat from Wilmington to Fayetteville. The state also started building roads in the western mountains, including one that became the Buncombe Turnpike. By connecting travelers to roads leading to Charleston, South Carolina, it helped make Asheville a more prosperous town. A national recession, economic slowdown, in 1819 put many farmers in debt. Land values in the state fell by one-third in 5 years. Only Wilmington shipped more than $1 million in goods during the period. Frustrated North Carolinians left their state. They headed across the Appalachians to the newer states on the Mississippi River. In 1837, a legislator estimated that more than 200,000 natives had left in the previous 20 years. Some who left were among the most talented leaders of the new nation, like future presidents Andrew Jackson and James K. Polk. Five of the early governors of Tennessee were born in North Carolina, as were three of the first governors of Alabama. Levi Coffin, one of the founders of the Underground Railroad, left Guilford County for Indiana and later Ohio. Murphy's Proposals. Some prominent North Carolinians tried to make the state better. Their leader after the War of 1812 was Archibald D. Murphy, one of the more renowned leaders in the history of North Carolina. Murphy grew up in Caswell County near the Virginia border. He attended David Caldwell's Academy, then the university in Chapel Hill. He became a lawyer and judge and started a large farm west of Hillsboro. Murphy's allies in a program of reforms included William Gaston, a New Bern lawyer, Charles Fisher, a Salisbury newspaper editor, and Joseph Caldwell, the president of the university. Murphy's group eventually presented a series of ideas to the legislature for funding. The two principal plans focused on internal improvements and public education. Internal improvements, a phrase popular at the time, referred mostly to transportation. For Americans, after the War of 1812, that meant waterborne travel. In states like Tennessee or New York, a resident could take a boat from one end of the state to the other. This was not so in North Carolina, where residents in the backcountry continued to be separated from the coast by their rivers, and the eastern residents increasingly were hemmed in by clogged sounds. Murphy's proposals attacked both problems. He recommended the state deepen channels through the inlets and sounds to enable ports like Edenton, Beaufort, and New Bern to receive larger ships. In the west, the state would remove all the rocks that made navigation of the Catawba and Yadkin rivers difficult. Then, Murphy proposed two canals, man-made water channels that allowed a horse or mule to pull flatboats with one-fourth the effort needed on the roads. One canal would connect the Roanoke, Tar, and Neuse rivers with the channel that went out at Beaufort. The other would connect the backcountry to the one sizable river in the state, the Cape Fear. The backcountry canal was to be dug from the Charlotte area to Fayetteville, opening the Catawba from Morganton and the Yadkin from Wilkesboro all the way to Wilmington. The second part of the plan dealt with public education. Murphy, Caldwell, and others urged the state to fund in every county at least one common school, a school where even the most common family could send children to learn the rudiments of education. Statewide taxes were to help pay the teachers. Students would pay according to their family's income. In addition, academies would be built across the state for the better students to continue their education. The brightest students would be allowed to go to the academies with a scholarship. Finally, the brightest graduates of the academies would be sent on to the university. If a student from a poor family got that far, he could attend at a reduced cost. In this way, the educational reformers hoped to keep the smartest students in the state to provide the leaders for the next generation. Schooling was to be for white children. Slave children would not be in the plan. However, among white children, the plan was to be offered on an equal basis to the rich and poor, the dull and the sprightly, Murphy argued. The leaders of North Carolina were still under the control of the frugal Maconites of the East. As a result, they were very slow to fund the Murphy proposals. A national recession after 1819 made it hard for the state to pay its bills for a number of years. In 1825, however, the state legislature set up a literary fund where revenues from stocks the state held in banks and canals could be used to help build schools. Little money was raised, however, because the state was so poor. Plus, the state kept borrowing from the fund, which stopped the growth of schools. The same course was taken with the Board of Internal Improvements. It scattered what little money it had for minor projects in different places in the state, to little effect. Despite Murphy's efforts, North Carolina had fewer canals than almost any other state. The state had learned that the terrain was too rough for canals to be built at a reasonable cost. Murphy himself did not live to see the fulfillment of his plan. He died in 1832, broke but not forgotten by his admirers, the very year that North Carolina began to take steps in the right direction.